Thanks, Dan. You know, and kind of way I feel every time I get on the mic at night is I want to say, good morning, Vietnam, like Robin Williams did in that movie, you know. I want to go gung-ho, you know, and get my dose of Voices of Nicotine Recovery and Nicotine Anonymous because it recharges me. And my name is Larry. I'm funky, and I'm a nicotine addict. I don't want to forget to claim my seat there and tell all of you guys that I have, by the grace of God and Voices of Nicotine Recovery, I have the following time. And every inch of that, 3 years, 7 months, 1 day, 22 hours, 45 minutes, 39 seconds, and every penny of that money, and every one of those 26,198, my gosh, cigarettes, and every moment of life that I've extended, that 3 months, 1 day, 23 hours, and 10 minutes of my life, I owe to you guys and to Voices of Nicotine Recovery. I was going to face-to-face meetings in desperate search of a way to quit because I just knew that it was going to kill me. I'd seen my father-in-law die of lung cancer in 2003, and it was just repeating itself over and over again. Cancer is really the disease of choice in my family, seems like on both sides, and it wasn't so much fear of death as it is fear of loss of quality of life. My sister just died last year. Actually, this year. She was in February of lung cancer. And she was 62 years old. God rest her soul. Very young. But, you know, it's that or emphysema or something. And, you know, that's my greatest fear is to be useless to my family and to be a burden. You know, I really just don't want to be that. That's, you know, it's, for me it's all about quality of life. I've even told my wife that if I ever was diagnosed and the diagnosis was severe, I probably would just skip, other than just short-term repairs in order to establish a baseline to keep myself healthy enough to take the last 30 days or so to enjoy my family, I really wouldn't want to, you know, go through chemotherapy and all that, unless it was a pretty good prognosis for it, you know. And I want to kind of take it straight and you know, go out like a lion, you know. And that's my zodiac sign, by the way, Leo. And but to qualify myself for it, I will tell you that as a very young age, my mother and father are World War II era parents. My dad flew P-51s against the Nazi Germany in France in World War II. He was 19 years old. He came home sporting Lucky Strikes and a taste for gin. And my mom smoked from all the whole time I knew her. I mean, she smoked until she was 76 years old and died of a heart attack. Actually, she's the exception. She did have a little bout with some cancer. But she is the exception rather than the rule to the cancer deaths in our family. And she smoked her entire life. My grandmother smoked. My brother smokes. My sister smokes. My wife smokes even today. And for our family, it was a rite of passage. It was part of immaturity. As you grew up, you were going to smoke. And I remember hating it for a while, you know, saying, put out the cigarette. I can't stand it here in the back seat of the, you know, 1965 Cadillac. You know, I remember those floorboards. Gosh, you'd have two or three kids laying down on those floorboards in the back seat of the car, and the smoke would just be a cloud up above, you know. And but here I was, I found myself stealing cigarettes to go over to the cutout. I remember very vividly, we were living in Volcano, Hawaii during Vietnam, and my mom was working at the Volcano House Hotel right on the edge of Kilauea Crater, and I had stole a cigarette or two, and we took them over to the cutout where they were cutting for the new Highway 11 going from Hilo to Volcano. And we fired up those cigarettes, and they were those Doral's taste me, come on and taste me with the plastic filters, you know. You could snap them apart and snap them back together. And, you know, we tried those and, you know, it wasn't immediate. I mean, I didn't start smoking then, you know, on a regular basis, but, you know, it was good. And, you know, you got that buzz and you got that feeling. And so I was not turned off by it at all. I don't remember even being offended by it. Other than, you know, you had to get it right. You know, sooner or later you had to learn how to smoke the correct way, inhale and get it all the way down and all that. And that, for me, came in the United States Air Force because it was, you know, high school it was discouraged to smoke, other than with my friends who used, you know, that I hung out with sometimes on the weekends and stuff like that. And then I would just smoke to be cool or whatever, and I never really inhaled or anything. But when I really started going at it strong was when the drill instructors in the Air Force, you know, you could break out of formation at basic training to go smoke and joke with the DI, while the rest of the people had to stand at parade rest or even attention. And so I went over to the VX and I bought a carton of Marlboro Lights or Winston's, I think they were at the time. I forget exactly. It was Marlboro's and Winston's for me. You know, cowboy stuff, you know. But I got a carton right away, and I had one of those, you know, you weren't allowed to carry cigarettes in your pockets because you had to be well-dressed and ironed and high and tight and all that. So we had these little packets that went on the side of your leg, plastic snap covers with elastic bands that you slipped over your sock, and that's where you hit them down there. You could get a pack of matches in there or a lighter and a pack of smokes. And so, you know, I quickly learned to go to the box because those ones in the soft pack would get perspiration on them, and they weren't so good then. But I learned how to inhale. And, you know, it was really counterintuitive for me, too, because here we were trying to run a mile in less than 13 minutes, which was pretty easy for, you know, most of the guys were young, 18. I was 17 years old when I went to basic training, so it was pretty easy for me to do those physical feats, so I didn't really consider it. But, you know, it was so counterintuitive from the healthy sort of, you know, let's get physical, Olivia Newton-John world that was coming on in the early 80s. But here I just went at it. It was still readily accepted. And, you know, I mean, my father did it, my mother, everybody did it. So you just weren't normal if you didn't smoke. I didn't know anything but that. And we weren't the kind of people that smoked and blew it in your face and were rude about it. You know, we had a nice big ashtray, and we cleaned our ashtrays, and, you know, it was clean, neat, and orderly, you know. It wasn't sloppy smoking. It was sort of sexy, wise, long cigarette holders. My grandmother actually used the long cigarette holders, and I saw my mother use those a few times when she'd be out at really nice events with white gloves, you know, and like dinner parties and that sort of thing. So, you know, there was that image, you know, that was sort of very ladylike or gentlemanly. And, you know, there was that image of sort of, one of those actors like Charlton Heston or somebody with a cigarette. Specifically, I would say John Wayne, you know, John Wayne with a cigarette, you know. And my doctor smoked. He was one of my dad's best friends, A. Rentrop, and he smoked cigarettes. And he'd be standing there checking you out with a stethoscope and have a cigarette hanging out of the corner of his mouth. I'll never forget. It would move up and down and bob up and down. So it was pervasive, and, you know, I kind of knew it was wrong, but, I mean, also, you know, nobody was, like, dying of it that I noticed anyway. Never mind that my grandfather on my dad's side died in the hospital when I was an infant, and my grandmother on my mom's side died when I was an infant as well. Both of cancer. And, although the grandfather arguably alcoholism, but that's another story. So I continued to smoke until 2000, and, well, what year is it now? You can do the math, 3 years ago. And I'm 52 years old, and it's just, for many years I tried to quit, and, you know, there was different excuses. I couldn't not drink and quit, you know, that was ridiculous. I'd have to give up alcohol and nicotine at the same time. So, you know, there was a thousand reasons to not quit. But I hated the smell of it. I hated the social stigmatism that went with it. I really didn't think it was healthy at all. My wife smoked when I met her, and I think, you know, probably we seek people who smoke in our lives, and smoking limits us certainly from a lot of relationships that we might have otherwise gotten engaged in, because people who don't smoke won't put up with it or tolerate it in many instances, and many of us now see that. You know, I mean, if it was all over again, we might select a spouse or select a partner based on different reasons, but at that time, it seemed very natural. We both smoked, and we didn't think any less of one another for that fact. And you know, so I guess long story short was it was just a solid part of my life. But it got to the point where I knew it was hurting me physically. I needed to be on my game. I'm the breadwinner for my family. I've been self-employed for many, many years. And I need to hustle, and I use my body, and physically I could feel myself diminishing. The price of cigarettes, you know, I swore I'd quit when they got to a dollar a pack. Rest my case, right? And, you know, and then I swore I'd quit when I was 30 years old, and then I swore I'd quit when I was 40 years old, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, you just keep lowering your standards. And I was doing these desperate measures to try to quit, and I got a 2-year quit, although for a while I was using the patches and other, you know, NRTs, and even dipping for a while, you know, justification by getting nicotine through a different source, but at least the smoke wasn't getting in my lungs, which I think is the spirit of these vapor machines today, or whatever, vaping. And, you know, there's probably some good there, but it's not, you know, what Nicotine Anonymous is all about. It's about getting rid of the nicotine completely. And so I was scared. I couldn't do it on my own. I failed over and over again. And I had been in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for some time, and knew that the 12 steps had served me well. And so I began to craft some, you know, thoughts on how I could use that to help myself. And, you know, nobody was really there to help me, because I can tell you, and you guys have probably experienced this, that at face-to-face Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, people are not there to try to help you quit smoking. You know, that's not the place you go. But I did utilize a sponsor there that I knew did not smoke, and he did not sponsor me previously, who had a good spirit about him. And I asked him if he would be my Nicotine Anonymous sponsor, because Voice of Nicotine Recovery, or just my sponsor for quitting smoking, because I knew I needed that, and he agreed that he would be. And so I started to piece together information that I needed to get to gain my quit. And you know, this time, what was different for me that the last time I quit, and all the prior times, is that I'd spent almost a year, right at a year, coming to Voices of Nicotine Recovery and listening and gaining knowledge and listening to the speaker shares. I'm being recorded tonight because I think that it's so very, very important to have that resource when you are weak, and you're, especially in the beginning for me, when I needed to hear you know, Dan or whoever, I listened to every single one of them. And I want that resource there for people that I sponsor, and I want that resource there one day if my daughter needs this. So, you know, it's so incredibly important to me to have that resource, because I listened to those words and I hung on to every one of them. And so I just, you know, knew in my mind, if I stood on the shoulders of the giants, the people that came before me, you know, that then if I listened to what they said, that I would get it. So I began to plan, you know, this, it was totally premeditated, and began to plan this quit. And I knew I would do it when it was comfortable for me. I knew I wouldn't rush it. I knew I would take it one day at a time. I knew I would pray about it. I knew I had a higher power in place. I had already surrendered my life and my will, you know. And so it was just a matter of figuring out how to get that together. And because I'd used Wellbutrin, and I'd used the patch, and I'd used Chantrix or whatever it is, and, you know, all these different methods for quitting before, I knew sort of what would serve me best. And for me, it was the patches. And I knew that I had to get rid of all the paraphernalia. I knew that I would have to tell my wife that I was going to do this, and I would have to distance myself from her direct smoking, you know, in the beginning. And I knew, most importantly, for those of you who have a mate and you're trying to quit, or if you have a mate who hasn't quit, that that I could not measure my success by her success. Because my doctor had told me once, there's no way I could quit smoking if she didn't quit smoking, that we just had to do it together. He'd never seen any success that way, and it would be a failure. And I knew that I would have to just carve myself out and do it for myself. And not meaning to be mean or hateful or anything like that, although there have been times when I have been offensive to her, I know, because of my quit. And I, you know, I pray for my inventory, pray for forgiveness for those things. But, you know, it just happens, you know. And I knew that I would have to distance myself a little bit then. And I did that. And I listened to the meetings, and I started getting involved immediately in service work by, well, I think for the first month, my sponsor at the time, yeah, I know he did, Herb, told me not to speak. For my first month of sobriety, he just wanted me to listen, okay? And so I took that advice as well. And so I didn't speak for 30 days, and some people goaded me on. I think it was Paula at the time was goading me on to share. And I didn't really, you know, want to. I wanted to do it by the rules, because I really wanted to quit. And one of the reasons I need to include too, that, you know, was on the list of reasons to quit besides my own health and, you know, my quality of life, was I have a daughter who is now 9 years old, and you can see that she was around five when that happened. And I didn't want her to ever see me with a cigarette in my mouth. You know, I did not want to do that. I wanted to break the cycle. You know, for me, people are like, well, this person in the family smokes. That means everybody in my family smokes. Okay? Everybody. And like my brother said when I saw him not long ago, he's put it down now, but he could smoke one, you know, and he took his arms and put it out like the big fish story. He could smoke one that big right now. And my nephew's smoking. He's in the Air Force. So, you know, it's a family characteristic, and I just knew I was breaking a cycle. This is a huge cycle that's embedded in my, it's almost genetic in my family. And maybe it is, you know, but I don't really know. But if I can break that cycle, wouldn't this be huge? This would be like better than getting a PhD in electrical engineering or something, you know. I mean, you know, I'd be brilliant if I could do that, right? Well, you know, one day at a time, with your help and by working the steps, I'm able to achieve it and maintain it. And people often use that analogy of, you know, if you were a cancer patient and they told you this is a chemotherapy, it'll cure you, whatever, you know, the drugs, it'll cure you. Of course you take the drugs, you know, you do that and everything. And or whatever disease, you know, if you can, not cure you, but if, you know, if it's the maintenance of the thing that would keep you from dying, would you preserve your life? And for me, that's the way I approach this. Without working the steps and without participating and sponsoring and helping others, I feel that I would immediately go back to where I left off. I just know I would. And so I have to be personally involved in service as much as I can handle. And so I'm breaking the cycle, because my daughter, I don't want her to see that cycle. That cycle needs to be gone. And you know, at least for my part, it needs to be gone. And she needs to know why it's gone. At some point, you know, she needs to hear why. And because we don't hide things and lie about things and bury things like people did in my past, you know, we just don't. We own everything we do. And if we can't own it, then we need to get rid of it. You know, we can't overindulge, you know, because we are addicts, you know, and it's not just usually the cigarettes. So I qualify. That basically is it. I come from a long line And, you know, I would quit being a spectator, and I was going to step into the game of life and take charge. And so I took all these steps, and really the moment, the spiritual moment for me where I knew that I could do this was when I was working on my early quit, and I was doing what you guys told me to do, and my sponsor told me to do, taking good orderly direction. I forgot one day to put the patch on. Just forgot. And when I remembered, I freaked out. I was panicking a little bit, you know. Oh my God. And guess what? I didn't die. I went and I put the patch on. A little while later, I was okay. But then the next day or the day after that, I forgot again. And maybe the third time I did that, I said, you know, this is my higher, don't be a dumbass, this is my higher power saying, I'm lifting this burden from you. You are no longer going to crave every 20 minutes or every 30 minutes or every hour. You are no longer going to be, you know, a slave to cravings. That's the first time in my life I can remember since I was 17 years old that I didn't want a cigarette on a regular basis. And that was a spiritual awakening for me because it was not something I earned. If I got what I deserved, I'd be dead right now, okay? And it was not something that I was really working towards. I was too early in it. I was new to the game, and I had tried much harder in different ways before and never, but I had never been at a point where I'd surrendered my will and my life, and I'd never been at the point where I was taking such good orderly direction. And, you know, if that's not proof of a higher power, climb a mountain if you need to be convinced or something, you know. But, I mean, here's this stubborn German-Irish guy, you know, who's in construction for a living, who everybody around him smokes, his whole family ever smoked. He smoked, you know. I wasn't a militant smoker where I hated on people who didn't smoke, but, you know, I enjoyed my cigarettes, right? You know, so, you know, I quit. And, yeah, I'd tried for many years to quit before that, but I'd never had the burden lifted from me like that. So, how did I do that? And how do I stay quit? The most important part. Well, primarily through service to Voices of Nicotine Recovery and staying mindful of the past and never wishing to shut the door on it, right? You know, by coming here and listening to you guys and hearing from week to week people suffering with the pangs of craving and the emotionality and all the things we read in the long version of the Serenity Prayer for Nicotine Anonymous, all of that, you know, hearing all of that, the negative side of all that, just makes me so grateful. And so gratitude, and then dedication to a higher power, and always trying to do the next right thing. I was able to clean up, you know, as we do in our four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, really all through there. When we clean up our side of the street and we get things put away and tucked away, I like things squared away. I'm just really like that. I'm built like that. Organization, you know. When I got everything organized in my life and I started to feel that huge burden lifted off of me, I was no longer deceiving myself and others. I was, my soul felt whole. There was no more God-shaped hole in the donut, you know. It was full. I was a pastry again, you know, with a cheese filling, if you like, you know. But I was whole again. I didn't want to give that up. And that's one of the most powerful things. Once you get that, you just don't, if you're like me, you don't want to give that up. So you will keep, you know, doing the maintenance that you need to do on a daily basis to make sure that puppy keeps running, you know. And, you know, if you're not that way, if maybe if you're a procrastinator, or maybe if you're, I don't know what to tell you, but I will tell you this, that for me, you know, once I got things squared away and it's running good, I want to keep it running good. You know, clickety-clackety, tickety-tackety. I want to keep oil in the wheels. I want to keep constantly working on it, because what I was feeling before was just miserable. Inside my head was a mess. I didn't have, you know, COPD or lung cancer, and I didn't go broke. I can afford them, you know. Heck, I buy them for my wife now. But The fact of the matter is that I was an emotional and mental wreck. You know, I couldn't live with myself anymore. I would have rather died at that point than keep smoking. I was a slave to those things. And one of the things that really impressed me about this program was the fact that, you know, the grand hoax that cigarettes are my friend. You know, when I started to really peel away the layers and get to that, I realized how deceptively ridiculous that was. I just kind of laughed at myself, you know, and I'm like, you know, the denial falls away, you know, and you go, well, you dummy, you know, and I couldn't stand, you know, now that I know the truth, I couldn't stand to go back. It would just really be a miserable thing. So, face-to-face meetings weren't working for me, as I may have mentioned it. There's a local hospital that was close by that I went to, and it was like six people, and, you know, there were two that had been there some period of time, and God love them for bringing the meeting and keeping it there. But, you know, on that night, my daughter had softball, and I was coaching, and one thing led to the other, and I thought, you know, there's got to be a place online probably, because that's a rich, you know, like, if you want to sell something, sell it on eBay, you know, if there's any value to it, because you've got the worldwide community. And, of course, having been in the Air Force, I realize there is a world outside of the town I live in. So I thought I'd come here and just see what I could find. I found this thing, Yahoo Groups, Voices in Nicotine Recovery, nice little serene picture on there. Gosh, I just, like, walked into a miracle, didn't I? I mean, and I met Celeste on Sunday nights. I was going to Celeste's meeting. God love her. She might even be here. On Sunday nights, and listened and shut up and listened and shut up and listened and shut up. And slowly instead of quickly, you know, like I tried to do everything before. Oh, the miracle cure, you know, 19995, you can have the cure. Instead of doing that, I just took it one moment at a time, and I just tried to listen to the people who were successful. You know, shut up and listen. You know, there's an Eastern tale that says, you know, our proverb says, sit down, shut up, be careful. You are on the edge of the roof, and you're about to fall. You know, and that's really where I was. I was on the edge of the roof, and I was about to fall, and I was standing up just mumbling away and didn't even realize it, you know. And when I finally got some perspective on where my life was with smoking, I realized, you know, and none too soon. Look, my sister's gone now, and you know what really... I'll tell you what the biggest thing that motivates me right now, today, is that if you look at my time, 3 years, 7 months, 1 day, 22 hours and 45 minutes, I am less than five months away from a new set of lungs. Now that is a miracle. I cleaned off an old hard hat of mine because I have to have it for an upcoming job that was hanging in my garage, and that's where my wife smokes. And she's like, well, that thing's nasty. And I was like, yeah, think of what the inside of your lungs look like. I mean, really, I was looking at that hard hat when I was cleaning all the nicotine brown off of it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to have a new set of lungs here. And for those of you who've suffered with COPD or cancer or anything, you know, lung related, what a blessing, what a miracle that is, you know, that we can regenerate our lungs. And what a great, great blessing I'll have in my life if I can go out with liver cancer or something else, you know, being able to breathe. And to me, that's just so huge that I hang on to that thought. And it's just incredibly motivating for me because, you know, especially as we get older, we want to fire on all cylinders. And, you know, if I watched my father-in-law die of lung cancer, and I want to tell you, when you're drowning like that and you can't breathe, it is the most scary thing. I could see in his eyes just the fear. And he was not, you know, like that. He was a very strong guy. And, I mean, it's just horrible, you know. And but for all that, I don't want to be that kind of a burden to my family. I would just as soon... not do that to them. Now, there's still no guarantee. I know that. I've got a friend who has cancer now, lung cancer and brain cancer, metastasized in the brain, and he hasn't smoked in many, many years. So, you know, hey, it's not just about that. But for me, it certainly is a lot of it. I don't know what I would do if I spoke and I didn't give a lot of credit to my higher power. You know, in the beginning, I didn't have a problem with the higher power because I had not, I always thought there was a higher power. In fact, I knew it. I just knew that I was hiding from my higher power. And, you know, I didn't think my higher power would notice me because there's a lot better people, you know, presidents and queens and kings and, you know, kings of industry and queens of industry and, you know, I'm nothing to nobody type thing. But, you know, the higher power I have now is one who loves us all equally as brothers and sisters, without difference for one or the other, no matter your size, your color, your shape, your ethnic origin, there's really no difference between any of us. And if I think there is, it's just a character defect that's mine, because my higher power put us all here and made us all, you know, connect. So we are all part of one body in my world. And if I can be a healthy cell in that body, that's really just my role, you know, to contribute to Voices of Nicotine Recovery and Nicotine Anonymous. And, you know, there's really no controversy in my life regarding this. This is a known fact. You know, we might find out that this world that I believe in is really round, and I think it's flat right now. But I'll tell you what, if the world is flat and I'm wrong, I'm loving it. Because this is what I believe with all my heart and soul, what I've told you guys tonight. And, you know, I owe Voices in the King Recovery, the collective spirit of all of you, and all those that have been here and left, and all those who will be here to come. That collective spirit, it's not my higher power, but it's close. It's my meeting power. It's maybe the fuel that fires our sustainable recovery. And, you know, this is so very, very important that we maintain this. And so I would just like to wrap it up and tell you guys, if you've ever considered doing anything for yourself regarding your recovery, consider service. It's the single most important thing I do that keeps me sober. It's the maintenance. It's the oil change. It's the thing that keeps me on the beam. And even though I don't want to do it many times, I force myself to. And I've been able to put together these days and this time because of it. And I'm sure of that. And with that, I'll tell you all thank you very much. And thanks, Dan, for having me tonight. Love you guys. And that's all I got. Go ahead.